The C-130 can fly higher and faster than the old model, which allows it to serve a greater range with quicker response time. The new cutters will replace the 110-foot patrol boat fleet that has been serving in Alaska since the 80s and is at the end of its service life. The 154-foot cutters can perform missions in more severe weather and environmental conditions. The new cutters will replace the 110-foot patrol boat fleet that has been serving in Alaska since the 80s and is at the end of its service life. The influx of Guard members will spur construction of new housing. They say that Kodiak will likely notice more Guard members and their families in the community. The Coast Guard did a study and looked at the estimates of how many families would be coming, and out of the 117 personnel expected, there's an average between 37 and 50 of those that will have families with them, and they'll be living in combination of on base as well as in town. Infrastructure projects to prepare maintenance facilities as well as pier and hangar upgrades are scheduled to begin this summer. About 1,100 active duty and civilian employees are currently stationed in Kodiak. And this morning we have Commander Rogers joining us to tell us more about that.
Daniel Rogers, I'm the Executive Officer of Base Kodiak.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And can you just go over one more time the number of personnel that are at the base? How many live on base, maybe how many live in the community? I don't know if you know that.
So a few of the numbers, the two largest commands here are the base itself, which is about 350 employees, the air station, which is also about 350 employees. The major cutters are more than 100 apiece. I think the Douglas Monroe is about 160. But if you add it all together for all the commands and everybody, all the Coast Guard, there's about 1,000 active duty here. And then in addition to the 1,000 active duty, they have all their dependents, their families. So all told, the Coast Guard presence here is about 3,500. So we have 420 or so houses. So that's how many people live in on base. And so, but not all those houses are always filled, again, because we're sometimes changing them out or doing major maintenance to them. So the balance then would live in town, other than barracks folks. So we also have about 200 people that live in the barracks, which are your single members who just get a room instead of an entire house. So all told, we can support about two-thirds, a little less than two-thirds, of the active duty members that are on board. So that means a third of it is being borne by the community.
You cited a number that was over 3,000, though, and that's like...
That's the dependents. So that's not... Families. That's right. That's the families. That's the folks connected directly to the Coast Guard. And it doesn't count the retirees. So there's a large presence here in Kodiak of folks that decide to make it their home long-term. So the connection to the Coast Guard is actually even larger than that inside the community itself.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well, so the base is the, think of it as the landlord. So we own all the land, all of the buildings, maintenance to support operations. So there's local operational commands as well. I'm the number two guy. So the commanding officer is the number one guy. The executive officer is the second in command. Some projects actually are already ongoing. The C-130Js, we have three projects right now to store the liquefied oxygen that's required to perform firefighting functions. And so there's a nose cone facility that's being built kind of at the edge of the tarmac. There's a storage facility, and then there's new ground support equipment that we're building another building to support the additional ground support equipment necessary for that. So all of that's currently ongoing as far as construction goes.
So people may see that if they come onto the base.
That's correct.
Maybe even from the road.
Right.
So officials have told us that new personnel have already begun arriving. Do you know how many are already here?
So we were scheduled in FY16. There was a little bit of a delay in the C-130Js coming, which had to do with, again, building these new facilities for the liquefied oxygen. So apart from that, we didn't really feel comfortable bringing those new aircraft because we couldn't support them. But the people, started coming earlier. So there's about 20 or so additional folks that have come, again, in a ramp-up because the first C-130J is supposed to get here this fall.
And tell me about this liquid oxygen.
Because you fly higher, if there's firefighting, you have to depressurize. There's now a requirement to make sure those folks stay safe. So it's just a new upgrade. So back to your technological advances.
I see. Can you explain a little bit more about that, how technology is changing and how the Coast Guard is adapting to that?
So the difference between your patrol boats, for example, 110s, you talked about 110s in Alaska in that particular fleet. 110s can't go very far, and you wouldn't expect a 110-foot patrol boat to cross the Gulf of Alaska. 154-foot, FRC, because it's longer, it's got more of a beam, it's more seaworthy is the best way to describe it. So that kind of an advance allows us to go further distances and allows a couple of these ships to be stationed here. So it broadens out the overall range that we can provide operations across the state.
So is it just the larger size of the vessel, or are there other technological advances within the vessel that can help with rescue and all the great things that the Coast Guard does?
So again, go to 1980s technology, or 1990s as these things were built, and then go to technology today, and that helps explain some of the differences on the ships themselves. It's nothing special. It's just the kinds of radars we use, the kinds of weapons that are used. I mean, all these things change over the years. So you would expect that as the years go on and you build a new vessel, that it's going to be updated to more modern technology. So it's not a particular technology that we're safeguarding. We're just trying to upgrade the ships to be the most relevant, the most ready to respond to the operations that we have.
And, we do stories about all the time about the Coast Guard rescuing people out at sea from fishing boats, in remote locations, flying people places, in helicopters, et cetera. Can you give me an example of some way that this new cutter might actually help do that?
So one thing that has to be done, I mean, again, talking aviation, Alaska is more, I hate to say it this way, but self-rescue because of the sheer distances that you're talking. So when you're trying to translate this to folks that are in the lower 48 is sometimes difficult. But imagine having to respond from New Orleans to a SAR incident that occurred in Michigan, and that's the nearest air station. So some of the things that we do is forward operating locations, these kinds of things too, Kotzebue, when we do summertime operations, to allow for kind of this leapfrogging, because one air crew is going to bag out and be unable to go. So if you have platforms like the new OPCs, operational patrol cutters that are coming here, and the ability to land those helicopters on the ships, then now your leapfrogging can be in different locations. Or you can simply take the helicopter and launch from a distance much further away than having to leave just from the air station. So there's two different kinds of ships. There's the fast response cutters and the operational patrol cutters. Both of those are resulting in the personnel increase here in Kodiak. The fast response cutters can't land a helicopter, but an operational patrol cutter could. So the fast response cutters, it really is seaworthiness, the distance they can go, but it doesn't necessarily relate to the air operations, unless they're performing joint operations, for example. So helicopters can do some rescue, ships can do some rescue. If I can take the ships further, then potentially they can respond to search and rescue cases. You don't have to use a helicopter, just as an example. So it's all the force laydown, how the vessels and aircraft are actually deployed to provide the best search and rescue, fisheries control, those kinds of things.
I see. So having these new cutters, these fast response cutters, could eliminate some of that helicopter use.
If they're in the location necessary to be able to respond, yes.
And what about the C-130? Can you tell me how this will improve things and some of the technological advances in these C-130s? Is it one C-130 that's coming here or multiple?
Well, one model of C-130, the C-130J, but all told, I think it's five C-130s are supposed to come over the next few years. So the difference in the C-130s, so back to this, the helicopter can, go a certain distance, but then the flight crew needs to swap out just because of the sheer distances we're talking. C-130s typically follow with the relieving flight crew. So the ability for the C-130 to support the operations, again, if they can fly higher, they can fly longer, overall, there's a better opportunity. They're also used as communication platforms. So one thing a lot of folks don't know, the communication detachment out here, anybody ever seen The Perfect Storm? We send out these teletype messages over the radio, over HF radio, and that's how the folks in the Bering Sea actually still receive weather transcripts is from the Coast Guard. If that ever goes down, the backup is C-130s. So having more capable aircraft allows for that increased communication opportunity.
And I know a C-130 was just used in this mission where they discovered the illegal fishing vessel relatively near Japan. So you also do that sort of work
Well, Alex Haley's actually gone that direction. I can't speak to the particular case because I don't know. Again,
it was the Alex Haley.
I'm the base guy, so I just provide the support here locally.
But would you use the C-130 in those sorts of situations
absolutely.
As well?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things we actually coordinate with the Russians, as an example, on high seas drift netting, some of these awful things that destroy our fisheries, we coordinate with other governments, and C-130s are part of how we do that to try to catch these folks that are illegally fishing.
Let's talk a little bit about the practical changes necessary for this ramp up. You said that there are already some construction projects going on base, and I know some of that will be housing too. And it sounded like some of the Coast Guard's families will live here in town as well. Do you have any sense of what the mix might be, or you know, whether there's enough housing here for that, or there'll be new housing built? What can we expect?
Well, so I can speak to what's happening on base. I can't necessarily speak to how it will affect the community. We want to build enough to support the families that are coming, but we don't want to negatively impact the community as we do that. This year, Congress passed, I think it's $32 million. That's five-year money. It's designed for the first phase of housing construction. So one of the difficulties for the Coast Guard is, I mean, because of all the rules and everything else associated with how we build housing, they can be very expensive to build. And so, you know, how much do you, you know, leverage town, and how much can you trust, you know, long term? We're not going away from the Arctic, let me tell you. So it makes it a pretty safe investment to at least build some. So what's the right number is a much harder thing to gauge. And that's why we're phasing the project. So construction maybe in the next 2-3 years. You typically don't want to push it right out close to the end of the 5 years because, you know, any unexpected things, you don't want the money to expire from the government before you're done. But expect, you know, phases of construction beginning as soon as maybe 2 years from now.
Okay. Some people have remarked to KMXT after we did this original report that we should ask the Coast Guard about the phasing out of other jobs at the same time as the increase in these new personnel. So is that happening? I mean, obviously you must have some of that, some people retiring, some people leaving, you know, of their own volition. But is there kind of, they're saying, you know, oh, maybe 117 people are just retiring out as they increase. Is there a real increase or not?
So the best way to describe it, there's a difference between talking about people and talking about positions. So these people fill positions. So the real question is whether or not the positions, that's the net gain, is it a real increase? That is connected to, again, the kinds of vessels that are coming. C-130Js have more people assigned to them. Operational patrol cutters and fast response covers have maintenance crews, shoreside maintenance, assigned to them. We call them MAT teams, maintenance assistance teams. Those are real numbers, real people coming that don't currently reside in Kodiak because the 378s and the Alex Haley do not have those same shoreside maintenance requirements that these new vessels do. So while people are transferring out, let's go back to the difference between the C-130Hs and the C-130Js. Are the Hs leaving? Yes. How many crew go to an H? This number. How many go to a C-130J? A net increase in the number of people. So even as people retire, come, go, the number of billets, the assets themselves determine the total number of people that are coming. And yes, that is a net gain here locally.
Okay. So what would you say to someone who may be skeptical about this? Because we definitely had some skeptics saying to us, you know, this is not a real number, and I know you've just explained it to me. It sounds like, you know, there may be some people that will retire out, and maybe it will seem a little bit less, you know, maybe three quarters of that amount or something like that. How would you explain it to somebody in the community?
So again, think to any kind of an organization. There are a number of jobs available to the, you know, to call it a contractor that's trying to build a particular project, and he has a certain number of jobs that he's advertised. That number of jobs is funded. So will that contractor provide all the people associated with those jobs? Well, yes, if he can hire them, if he can send them, if he can use them, if they have the right skills. So part of our job in the Coast Guard is to make sure we've got the skills, we've got the people that we can send. So will every billet be filled at every particular point? No. People get in trouble. People retire. People do a variety of things. Will we make every effort to fill all the positions that we have? Absolutely, because that's how we conduct our operations. So you may not see everybody, but again, that's just the normal piece of doing business. The billets are increasing, so the positions, again, those things that are sent out there to hire for. And we will make every effort to fill all the positions that we have so we can conduct the operations that are necessary.
And can you explain to me again, or in a little bit more detail, why more people are needed for these? I know it has to do with technology, but why are the crews larger?
The crews are larger, at least on the cutters, because the cutters themselves are larger. So the operational patrol cutter is considerably beamier, so the width of the vessel is much larger than a 378. So here's this replacement for what we call our medium endurance fleet, and yet it's larger than our old high endurance fleet. So just the sheer size of some of these vessels, which is also goes to our construction projects, we're going to have to upgrade our piers. The wind load for a ship that's that much larger is going to increase the requirement on the lateral loading on our cargo pier, because it has to be stronger because of the kinds of winds that we get here in Kodiak. So it's the sheer size of the vessel. So we can talk technological advancement all you want. These are bigger vessels. And then again, the patrol boats, we didn't have patrol boats stationed here. These are net additions on vessels themselves. So this isn't just more people on a vessel. These are new vessels that are coming to Kodiak.
And how about the C-130J?
That's simply the size of the crew on board. I'm not an aviator. I can't speak to specifically what that new crew does, but I know they fly with more people than the C-130Hs.
Okay. And is there anything that you think is important for the public to understand about this that I haven't asked you about or that we didn't cover?
The real goal of the Coast Guard in the community is to find that good relationship. Again, we're not just here to conduct operations. Very few people grew up here in Kodiak. Very few people are intending necessarily to retire and stay full time. That makes us guests here. Our goal is to make sure we're having as little impact, at least negative, to the community and as much positive impact as we can. So again, this goes to, if it makes more sense for housing to be built in the community, we'd rather, see the community build the houses and we'll fill the people. But I don't want to negatively impact housing prices, for example, because Coasties, we get a modification to the amount of housing allowance that we receive. So that could go up for us, but it doesn't necessarily do it for folks that are working the canneries and other sorts of places in town. So there's one of those, that's a genuine concern of ours. We don't want to negatively impact the community. So maybe it makes more sense to build housing. But finding the balance between those two, we don't want to be an entity in and of ourselves. We'll take care of our own and nothing for the community. That makes no sense either. So what is that balance? How does that, best occur? And I wish somebody could tell me. So again, phasing is the best option that we've been able to come up with. We'll do it in stages. We'll figure out whether or not we're meeting the needs, and we'll see what the community can support as well.
And how are you doing that? Are you in conversations with the borough or the city, the local tribal organizations? Are you having these conversations with different community organizations?
Yes, we have Coasties embedded into most of these long-term development plans. Our facilities engineers are engaged. The difficulty is, and then the communication piece. That's why all of the information was sent to the city on here is the number of people to help them make decisions on where would the investment make the most sense.
Have you gotten any answers?
Let's just say that lots of folks want guarantees before, putting their money forward, and so would we. So that makes sense.
And, one other thought is, I know you have very special rules about contracting. Is there a possibility that you might contract some of this construction and development of infrastructure, the construction of that, with local companies, or will this all be bringing in contractors from outside?
So that, again, goes to the bid rules. So, I mean, folks locally are more than welcome to bid as long as they meet the requirements as laid out in these contracts. So no one is excluded from that bidding process, but they're going to choose the folks that make the most sense for completing the project.
And are there any other interesting things that are going on with the Coast Guard that the public should know about that we could talk about?
Well, there's always fun things going on from a building and construction perspective. If I had my facilities engineer in here, he would most likely want to tell you all about the really cool things we do about water, for example. So there is a new water crossing, as an example, for the Buskin, which just goes to we're strengthening it for seismic concerns. We were able to get the project funded because we had a picture after a major rain event where the old bridge was actually underwater and covered in trees from some wind that had knocked it down. Well, that puts our entire water supply at risk. So improving the crossing at the Buskin River, you know, again, if I had my facilities engineer, he would just rave about, you know, how cool that is. The reality is the infrastructure of the Coast Guard is dated. We took over a Navy facility. Some of this stuff is original. Our senior officer quarters right now, it's original plumbing and asbestos walls. So good luck doing minor repairs because it's a full-on asbestos project. But again, this isn't, I don't mean that in a complaining thing, but these are the exciting things that we do here at the base is we fix the houses, we construct, you know, we fix the infrastructure, we construct for the future, rehab buildings, fix piers, just to make sure that the operators, you know, locally can go and do their operations. So that's all the exciting stuff that we do over there at the base.
And this Buskin Water Project, this is underway right now. And how long do we expect that that's going to go on? Is that wrapping up or will it go on the rest of the summer?
So it actually will wrap up here in about 2 weeks, a little bit more. So the tie-ins, they were a little delayed. We had some parts that didn't show up. So and when you got a big old piece of pipe that doesn't show up, you can't shut off your water for a short period of time. And oops, I didn't have the right part. So we caught it in advance. It delayed the project a little bit. But the tie-ins, once they occur, will be done here in the next, you know, 2-3 weeks.
And the projects that you're talking about on this original naval base that was converted for the Coast Guard, it sounds like there could be lots of projects at this base into the future just because you took over a naval facility.
So there are some, just one example, we'll go back to the water system. The right way to do this is you need to be replacing a portion of the water. So similar to, we have 400 houses. So how often should we replace the roofs on the houses to make sure every roof is replaced within 30 years? So you plan it all out in advance, you program the money, and then you execute it on the ongoing basis. We transfer families out. I mean, new families are coming in once every 3 years. And as those families come in, we have to rehab those houses. So one family moves out, we do something called a change of occupancy maintenance. That has to be to rehab the house, make sure it's ready for the next tenant to come in. Any major projects need to be done, maybe the flooring needs to be replaced, and then the new family can move in. So it's the ongoing piece of how do you plan in advance to make sure that we can do this for a long, long time because we're going to be here for a long, long time.
So just like any responsible homeowner would do, but times 400.
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks for talking with me today. I really appreciate you explaining those details to us.
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to explain a little bit more because, again, the intent is to always have a positive contribution to this community and not a negative one.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.